I'm going to tell you a story you'll never, ever believe. How much detail do you really need, since you'll never buy any of it? At 1:30 in the morning on June 6th, 2028, Amplis and I drove the big blue van 5 miles east of the Caskin River and stopped on a quiet road near a shuttered convenience store. We went around to the back and opened the rear doors.
Watch his foot.
We guided the man in there down to the ground and walked him carefully over to a bench near some power lines, keeping an eye out for headlights. The man was barely awake. In another 20 minutes or so, he'd be fully alert. We got back in the van, cruised 100 yards forward, and parked under a streetlight. At 2:05, the man rose and began to walk down the road toward the lights of a trailer park and a sleepy strip of body shops, feed stores, and fast food joints. I'll never forget what Amplis said in the passenger seat as we sat there smoking, watching, finally putting the van in drive again to follow.
Do your worst, maniac.
What did I know then about Project Horseman? They kept everyone in the dark as much as they could. That's just sound policy. Amplis and I, we just followed orders. For a long time, I didn't even know the man we were taking out to Lothian every 2 weeks was anything more than a code word. Shifter. You have to understand, it was a different era. The world was on the brink. The Defense Department needed the Nidron bomb developed far, far quicker than anyone conceived. The post-Axis powers had suddenly realigned, and the threats were real. There was panic through the whole country. DEFCON had been at 2 for months. Extraordinary measures were called for.
I don't like this. It's not going the way it usually goes.
It's not a problem.
Ankle holsters itch me like crazy. Does it do that to you?
You know what Vorhoven told me yesterday?
Yeah, if he told you anything, that's an insane violation of protocol.
He told me what happened in the lab to that girl that time wasn't an accident. He said Shifter stabbed her.
Jesus, stop talking. I told you before. I don't want to know. Whoa. Why is he walking away from town? Speed up a little. Getting a bad vibe here.
So, there was this man. He was not quite well known in scientific circles, more of a rumor. Beyond brilliant, a generational mind, apparently. Where I and Amplis worked, he was referred to only as Dr. H. The kind of genius that can change the way people see things or change the world with their inventions. The problem was that in addition to having an IQ of 220 and an understanding of physics and chemistry beyond mortal comprehension, he was, well, I'm going to use the word psychopath because I'm not sure what other word there is. But the Nidron bomb, that was the thing he could provide that likely no one else on Earth could. Something so ingenious, but so intricate and complex that only he truly knew how it could work. So for 3 years, the Defense Department gave him a lab outside Denver and as many assistants as he needed. They all threatened to quit within their first month, unless they could work with Dr. H only remotely. No one was prepared for this man's personality type. Secretive, cryptic, profane, hostile, aggressive. Numbers and formulas were real to him. Humans were not. Unlike most sociopaths or narcissists, He didn't seem to have an act he put on to hide his true intentions. His intentions were all bad, all the time. Sometimes he spat at people who approached him and clawed at his own arms if the staff was late with his meals. And then there was what he did to that girl. I guess you have to understand what a stressed stent brain is to begin to see the Defense Department's reasoning in placing a call to the CIA 2 years after the bomb research began, when Dr. H withdrew into a silent shell, communicating with no one, not lifting a finger to further his vital research. I'd never even heard of a stressed stent brain. Soon enough, I'd be looking into the eyes of a man who, like maybe 1 in 10 million people in the world, possessed one.
Pull over here. Is that a garbage can he's picking through?
No, it's, I don't know what that is.
Never done anything like that before.
He just took something out of that box. He's got it in his hands. Did you see that?
Yeah.
You know, we can't let him get too close to the bridge. That's Cedarhampton over there.
I know. That's exactly where he's walking, too. Okay. Leave the van here. Let's get on our feet. Come on.
Before he went virtually catatonic in April of that terrible year, Dr. H had begun to play little games there in the lab in Denver. Nat Wells told me how he drove out there to deliver some files, and he tripped over a string tied low to the floor and was instantly smothered by a box full of mutilated rats, which had been rigged to fall on top of him. Here was the creepiest thing about Dr. H. Once in a while, he would just go dark. I mean, he would stop talking, stop bathing, sleep for hour upon hour, withdraw deeper and deeper into his own world. He could stay that way for days. It took something very specific for him to emerge into the land of the conscious again. Very specific. Dr. H stabbed the girl in the lab on the same day that the president, absolutely pressed to the wall by North Korea, gave the order to present to the Joint Chiefs of Staff whatever plans for the Nidron bomb were already in existence. To this day, I'm sure the president had no idea what Dr. H truly was, or the extent to which his darkest aspects were being coddled and entertained. That was when that old war hawk Nat Wells went into full panic mode. Based on Dr. H's sudden spectacular increase in output right after the stabbing and a couple of his other little games, as he supposedly called them, his case came under the top secret review of an eminent psychiatrist named Stuker. Stuker studied H's behavioral patterns over the years, beginning when charges of malicious destruction were brought against him in Oregon after he shot a leopard at the zoo. Stuker realized that after outbursts of violence, H's scientific proclivity and productivity went through the roof. Drugs could calm the man, and responsible parties had prescribed them for him for more than a decade, but they inevitably deadened his mind and his gifts. Had he not been covertly hired by the government, no doubt he wouldn't have been able to support himself anywhere for very long, despite all his damn degrees. What really made him different, though, was that his brain slowed to a crawl if the medications denied him an outburst for too long. It wasn't enough, you see, for Dr. H to look forward to the day when his Nidron bomb would annihilate countless people without radiation's after effects. He craved physical violence and confrontation now. Seeing H crouching in the corner of the lab, unwilling to move or speak, even as he seemed so close to delivering the bomb's final plans, that spurred Wells into drastic action. His rationale was that the fate of the world might well hang in the balance. So, yeah, the CIA did their best to handle the situation. But in the end, the CIA called us.
I think he went towards that motel over there. If he's still intending to hunt, that would make sense. I don't think he got to the bridge. There was just no time.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, you go down the alley. I'll go this way. We'll meet up. If we don't find him in 15 minutes, I say we call in. I mean, we lost him. It's guaranteed to happen at some point. Damn it! Damn it, I told Evelini. I told him we needed more direction on this.
A stressed stent brain, Dr. Stuker once explained to my superior, is like a balloon inflated beyond its capacity, but it can't simply snap and release all its energy. Dr. H's mind was that balloon. It needed release. It needed release in the form of destruction. Project Horseman couldn't reach its goal without him, and so something was arranged. One dark day, H apparently made some very interesting demands, and while they were initially shut down flat, somehow they were eventually agreed to. They say Stuker was the one who recommended it, but I don't know. The order I got one middle of the night was this: take him out. There's a place where he can roam, he can do what he needs to do, and then bring him back. Watch from a distance, but don't intercede. Don't interact with him beyond the necessary. He'll be drugged when you take him out there. He'll be very calm when he comes back out. If there are witnesses, intimidate them, but don't hurt them. If he's caught, wait for our call. At first, Amplis and I figured H would just burn something down, maybe. We were wrong. His hunts, which we drove him to every 3 weeks or so, were different than that. I'll never figure out who decided on Lothian as the place to take him. It was real quiet at night there, that was for sure. Nothing was open past 10. But like every poor backwater town that consists of a single intersection and little else, there was always someone out on the street. Some drunk or wandering soul. Someone who supposedly wouldn't be missed if they were dispatched. H always did it with his hands, and nobody saw, ever. He was sane enough to know not to be seen. And my superior was right. He did come back calm, real calm, sleepy even. Until the night he got away from us, he never showed one sign that he wanted to do anything but commit a single hideous crime and then submit to the van again, driven back under cover of darkness to the lab to work on the machine that would murder on an infinitely larger scale. Here's what I really think, though. Dr. H's fades into near catatonia weren't real. I've looked into his eyes, you see. And I think he was always acting all along. That's how evil he truly was. So now the story sounds utterly over-the-top insane, doesn't it? But it really happened.
Dennis, we have a problem. We lost track of Shifter. We're a mile outside Lothian. He obviously had some kind of plan. We think he stashed some car keys and now he's got them. Probably took them from somebody killed last time or the time before. We're in the van now. I know how close Cedar Hampton is. Just get some guys over there to sentry the bridge. We're still crawling Lothian. I don't want to hear it right now. What do you mean? What peace accord? We're not out here checking the news on our phones, you understand?
Yes. Shifter, Dr. H, had gotten some car keys to an old Volvo wagon, but Amplis was wrong about where he got them. He did not take them off the assistant manager of Lothian's duckpin bowling alley when he'd snapped that man's neck behind a sewing supply store at 3 a.m. Snapped his neck and then beaten him with something very, very badly, even after he was dead. I read that in the paper, because I sure as hell didn't watch. There had been many post-mortem wounds. The keys had come from somewhere unknown. You have to understand, a lot of foreign governments were interested in Dr. H's services. Governments or other organizations like mine, whose names weren't said out loud much. That's what I think happened. They maybe promised him something more rewarding than an occasional midnight kill. Maybe even something that I know Wells considered briefly. A room of Dr. H's own, underground, unseen, where people could be brought. Something that could just be hosed out when the man was done. Avellini sent many, many men out to Lothian the night Dr. H got away from us. There was no way he could have gotten back over the bridge without being intercepted. But he was more clever than that. We eventually found the car at 4 a.m. in the parking lot of a Walgreens in Shady Grove, 8 miles north of the river. The keys were still in it. Dr. H had left a note in the front seat, scrawled on the back of a pink bookmark with cute kittens on it. The note said only this: "Ha, ha." When she saw those words, Amplis spoke just one of her own into her cell phone.
Breakdown.
Dr. H was gone, and he has never resurfaced. When I go over the timeline of that night in my head, my mind still boggles, and my hands tremble a little bit over how he managed to find the minutes to give himself one more little reward before vanishing forever.
Coolidge County Police are still searching for answers in the case of the tragic motel fire that claimed 7 lives in the earliest hours of June 6th. The Rest Nook Inn on Route 2, just west of the state line, was burned to the ground through a deliberate act of arson, said Coolidge County Sheriff Marta Gates. And she reiterated her plea for witnesses or those with more information about the fire to come forward. The state coroner's office has determined that at least 2 of the victims endured post-mortem and redundant stab wounds.
That was all 9 years ago. God knows how many people a man like Dr. H can kill in 9 years. Amplis teaches calligraphy now. I tell you all this because I think you need to know how far certain people in power are willing to go. They called it protecting the country. What would you call it? Anyway, that's my story of why you've never heard of a bomb 50 times deadlier than any ever invented. I think if Dr. H is still alive, he has its final pieces still locked away in his brain, playing his little games. But it wouldn't surprise me if someone at some point just took him out. And if you don't believe the story because it sounds so implausible, well, friend, I'm not real sure what world you think you live in.